Good morning. My name is Carla Lewis, and I'm the Gainsborough Branch Manager. The date is March the 24th, and I am in the home of Ms. Catherine Elaine Pullins. The person that I'm interviewing is Catherine. We are located on 551 McDowell Avenue in Roanoke, Virginia. Ms. Pullins, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you give me some background information? And first, I would like to know where and when were you born?
Well, a woman doesn't tell her age, but I was born August the 14th, 1925, in the Old Borough Hospital.
Okay. How long have you lived in the Gainsborough area?
Take away 15 years and the rest of the time was spent in the Gainsborough area.
Can you tell me the streets you lived on?
Yes. First, Rutherford Avenue Northwest, then McDowell Avenue Northwest in the 500 block, then Harrison Avenue in the 600 block, then back to Chestnut Avenue in the 400 block, and now I'm back in the 500 block of McDowell.
Very good. Tell me about your parents and your brothers and your sisters.
Unfortunately, I had no siblings, but my mother was Bertha Wright Pullins. My daddy was Moses Benjamin Harrison Pullins. My mother often teased him about his name. My mother was the daughter of slaves, and she was the youngest of 15 children. Her father, of course, as a slave, never learned to read and write, but his memory was outstanding. Her mother, of course, never learned to read and write, but she could measure for cooking in the palm of her hand.
Now, did you have any extended family members living nearby?
Well, my mother had brothers and sisters here in Roanoke, and my daddy had one sister who lived here, and then in later years, after his niece returned from Washington, she lived here because he only had one niece on his side.
Okay, can you remember any of the names of your aunts and uncles?
Of course.
All right.
The girls. Aunt Kate was the oldest girl. She was number 3 in the line of 15. Aunt Henrietta was next to my mother. And I don't know what her number was, but she was past 10 because I think she probably was 12 or 13. And my mama. Now, they had 5 other sisters who died in infancy or early childhood, so I don't know their names. Her brothers, James Wright was Lily Mitchell's father. John Wright lived near the Gainsborough Branch Library, down the second house on the other side of the street, past Jefferson Avenue, Big White House. She had another brother named Thomas Wright, and he lived next door to us on Rutherford Avenue at 516. Her youngest brother, Edmund Wright, lived on Fairfax, and he was the father of Ed Wright, who used to be with the aristocrats. She had a brother named Willie. He lived in Pennsylvania. I don't know where he was in the list. She had another brother named Green. And I think that's all I can. Yes, that's 7 brothers and 5 girls.
Thank you. Describe your home life for us. Your house, was it brick or did you have a garden?
My daddy had a garden in the country where he owned a little plot of land near his parents. I was an only child. My mother was 30 when I was born, and my daddy was 35. So I was kept like this. I dare not go off the porch if she said stay on the porch. And I think I got a whipping every day. And I told her once that I was going to tell my daddy. When my daddy came, I looked like a little zebra because she had really whipped me. And then she told me, tell your daddy. I didn't have anything to tell him.
I understand. What kind of activities did you participate in the neighborhood?
What are you talking about? Mrs. Dorinda Charlton tried to teach us to play cards. I was very dumb, so I didn't learn very much. Even after I started teaching, she tried again, and I still didn't learn to play. She was trying to teach us to play bridge, and that was too far above us. We did learn to play bid whist and pinochle a little bit, but that was it. We visited only the people who live near us. Janice Hilton and her family was across the street, but they were too young. So it was Louise Logan, Constance Johnson, you know as Hamla, Minnie Harper, and her brother Buster, me, and Dorothy and Nina Charlton. We didn't go across the Fifth Street. Oh no, you had to stay within your own block. We had parties with crackers and peanut butter or jelly. We didn't know about the parties that kids have today.
What kind of work did your father do, and what kind of work did your mom do?
Well, Mama was a stay-at-home mother, but the 4 years I was in college, she worked at Mr. Hale's cleaning and pressing shop on Henry Street. When I finished college, of course, she came back home. My dad was the chauffeur for American Viscose Corporation. I was very proud of him because he only finished third grade, but he could work my math while I was in school. He could do a whole lot of things that, and you wouldn't believe it, but his daddy was a teacher. But his mother was sickly, as they called it then, and so he always was the one, Papa, let me stay with Mama and take care of her.
Okay. Let's talk about your education now. Tell us where you went to elementary school, for instance. Did you have to walk to school? The school nearby? Were your teachers nearby? And where was your school in conjunction to your house?
I lived on Rutherford Avenue. I crossed the alley and I was at Harrison Elementary School. I came home for lunch because there was no cafeteria. And there was no point in my carrying a lunch across the alley. So I came home for lunch. And sometimes some of my friends would come with me. And of course, we didn't have a whole lot, but if we had a bologna sandwich, that was pretty good.
Okay. Did you ever stay home when it snowed?
What are you talking about? Our teacher, my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Sally Lawson, would tell us when we went home for lunch, tell your mama to send me a can of condensed milk, or tell your mama to send me a cup of sugar, or whatever. And then when we got back, she would make snow cream. All she had to do was raise the window and scoop down and get the snow. And of course, we all had our little bowls. You don't think they were plastic cups or anything. They were just our bowls.
Very good. And you talked about college. Did you attend 4 years of college during that time?
Well, I went to high school first.
Okay, let's go to high school first.
I went to Addison, and I finished Addison in 42. And I was very proud of my class because we gave Addison their official seal. Anything that you see that has an Addison seal on it was a gift of the class of 1942. I finished in February, and my mother paid a whole $5 for me to go back to school from February until June, and that's when I took the second part of typing. And that stood me well when I got to college, because believe it or not, I was secretary to the Dean of Women, and I used my little typing because she did not want someone who took shorthand. She wanted her letters done in longhand and then typed. So I was able to do that. And I made the enormous salary of $10 a month. And then the last 2 years, I got a raise. I went to the library, Carla, and I was working with accessioning books, and I got $15 a month. That was really something.
That was something.
And of course, when I graduated, Virginia Union University owed me $37.
So your experience at Virginia Union University served you well?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I went to Howard for graduate work. I got a scholarship when I graduated from Union to go to Howard. But my daddy said, baby, I can't do another year because it would only have taken 1 year to get the master's at that time. So I came home. I got a job. I worked, and I went back in the summers. And in the summer of 55, I completed my work, and the degree itself was conferred in 56.
When you say you completed your work, did you teach?
Well, oh yes. I taught weekday religious education for 3 years in all of the black elementary schools. And then when Reverend James R. Johnson Jr. was leaving Addison, he recommended me to continue teaching Bible there, and I taught Bible for several years as an elective, but in time it waned, and because when I stopped teaching weekday religious education, Madeline O'Hare was at the height of her whatever she was doing, and then kids began to sort of lose interest. And so I started teaching English and history because my major, both in college and in graduate school, was English.
Okay.
And I could teach history also.
Okay. And you were able to go back to Howard and complete your master's
the
degree.
The summers of 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, and I finished it in 55. But 55 was a terrible summer because I left Roanoke on a Sunday afternoon, and I arrived in Washington about 8 o'clock that night. And the transportation system of Washington, D.C. went on strike at midnight that night, and I had to use taxis for the whole 6 weeks that I was there. But I had a girlfriend whose husband worked at one of the auto dealers in the summer. He taught auto mechanics in regular school year, and I had a cousin. So between the two of them, I was able to cash my checks and stay, because the college would not cash my checks. They would accept them for my bill, but they would not cash any other checks.
Okay. Let's go back to your home life again, and let's see. Did you have radio, television, telephone, refrigerator? Did you have any of those things, or did you use other means?
Well, we had an ice box, and you had a card that you would stick out on the front that said 25, 50. I don't think it went beyond 50 pounds, because most of the boxes would not hold more than 50 pounds at a time. And then, of course, you had a little pan underneath to catch the water when the ice melts.
Okay.
Television. How many years had I been teaching before we got television? Radio, yes, you had one little radio for the whole family, and everybody sat around and listened. And my mother loved her stories. Ma Perkins and I can't think of the names of the others, but I definitely remember Ma Perkins,
okay,
because she even gave recipes from Spry, which is similar to Frisco.
Okay, so you didn't have telephone?
No. Oh, yes.
We didn't have telephone.
But you see, we had party lines. And with the party line, once my mother was talking to someone, and they had talked about someone was dead, and the person on the other, one of the other persons on the line, said, "Who did you say was dead?" They kept up with whatever, and you could not get them off, and nobody could afford a private line, so everybody had party line.
Alrighty, I understand that. Now, did you all sit on the front porch in the afternoons and talk to your neighbors?
I didn't like to sit on the porch, but Mama sat on the porch. And that's how they visited. They did not go in and out of each other's homes. And they weren't angry with, but, you know, Ben Franklin said, fences make good neighbors. And so they talked across the porches.
What chores did you have to do around the house? You said you were an only child. Did you have chores to do around the house?
Are you kidding? Before I was tall enough to wash dishes, my daddy got a box, and I had to stand on the box and wash dishes. Because I was little, I had to dust everything that was low. And I didn't know that there were such things as mops when you went to scrub, because you got your scrub bag, your scrub rag, not a sponge, a rag, and your bucket, and your chisel or whatever, and you scrubbed on your knees, and you didn't avoid the corners either. You had to do the whole thing.
Okay. Did you all have stories that were passed down from one generation to the next generation? Recipes that were passed down? You know how families would gather around Christmas and different times and tell stories, or in the afternoon they would tell stories. Did you all have favorite stories that you told from generation to generation?
Well, no. I remember just one story that my mother told of her dad. One of her brothers, I think the one that lived near Gainsborough Library, had a grandson, and he wasn't doing well in school. So his father carried him over to the country to live with the grandparents. But that was fine. And every day when he came home from school, Grandpa would ask him the question, "June, what did you learn today?" And the first day he said, "The turkeys say gobble, gobble, gobble." The second day, Grandpa asked him, and the answer was the same. The third day, the answer was the same. And Grandpa said, "I swaffle, God, if you don't come to me with something beyond the turkeys say gobble, 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 I'm going to whip you." And my mother often said that there were just the three of them at home together. All of the other kids were older. And each Sunday, they would have to read three chapters of the Bible to Grandpa. He couldn't read. And so they knew that they had him, and they would sometimes skip over. He said, "Ain't that?" He didn't know what it was, but he knew it was not what they were saying. So they would have to go back and correct. His memory was just outstanding. He brought produce to the market on Friday, and people called him Uncle Friday. He never forgot anything that anybody asked him to bring back.
He didn't have to write it down. He remembered.
No, he couldn't write it down. And from his house to Roanoke was 11 country miles. Now for him to remember what each person told him to bring back. And I just admired that. And when we, the grandchildren, learned to recite Bible verses, oh, that just delighted him so. But I have to tell you one little thing about
please
Grandpa.
Do. Please do.
What was his Grandma name? Wesley Wright. Grandma was sick, and so the three girls were taking a week over at a time, you know, to take care of their mother. So they lived where there was red mud. And I was with Mama that time. And Grandpa had a big bed, and you don't know anything about counterpanes. That was their name for spreads, and they were made of different, of heavier material than you. And I had been playing outside in all of this red mud, and Grandpa put me in the middle of his bed, and I walked all over that counterpane. My mama was so angry with me. And Grandpa told her, "You ain't got nothing to do but wash it." And you know I walked in all over. But ask me what happened when I got home. Just ask me what happened when I got home. I didn't try that anymore.
Oh, no. I'm sure you didn't. Okay. What businesses did you shop? Were there businesses that you could go to shop, or did you make other arrangements?
Well, my mama would take me down to Montgomery Ward, or Sears, or Philip Levi on the market. That was just a nice little score that you could get shoes. And when I graduated from Addison, my white shoes came from Philip Levi, Levy, whatever you wanted to call it.
Okay.
But they weren't expensive. But my Uncle Tommy and his wife gave me a pair of shoes from Bush Flora, because that's what they gave all of the nieces when they graduated, a pair of shoes from Bush Flora. Because you know we hadn't had any shoes from Bush Flora before.
So that was a real treat, wasn't it?
Right, right.
Okay. Ms. Pullins, what kind of businesses did the African Americans have?
Oh, that is really something that bothers me. If you'll allow me, I'm going to just read you some of them.
That's fine.
We had three pharmacists, Dr. John Brooks, Dr. F.O. Robinson, and Dr. B.A. Adams, and they were in different areas of the city. Dr. Brooks was on Henry Street. Dr. Robinson was at the corner of what we call Clayton's Drugstore. And Dr. Adams was in Northeast. Now, he did come over to the community drugstore that is just before you go across the Henry Street Bridge. But originally he was in Northeast, so you had those pharmacists there. Physicians, Dr. J.H. Roberts, Dr. W.C. Yancey, L.C. Downing, G.A. Moore, Jr. and Sr., Maynard Law, J.B. Clater, Sr. and Jr., F.W. Clater, I.D. Burrell, and S.D. Williman. For plumbers, you had Maxie Rayford and Walter Wheaton. We didn't know anything about kindergarten at school. There were private kindergartens. Mrs. Annie Means, Mrs. Louise Wright, Mrs. Lucy Heller, Mrs. Gertrude Jones, Mrs. Debbie N. Hunter, Mrs. Thelma Johnson, and Mrs. Page. Private kindergartens, and I didn't hear anybody complaining about what the children learned at them. We had a nursery school, but that was at Gregory, and that had Mrs. Mabel Dupree and Mrs. Johnny Cooper. They were sisters. And then finally, they built a nursery across from the new Addison, but there was explosion from the dump, and that building just lost its life. It was gone. For the grocers, and there is not a black grocery store in the neighborhoods anywhere. B.H. Hale, A.S. Williams, Roberta Basket, W.O. Hickman, Roscoe Banks, L.A. Sidnor, Moses Lipscomb, E.P. Neighbors, and H. Thomas and H. Spencer, scattered all through the neighborhood. I say that we lost a lot of things when we got integrated, because we forgot about the people who had been our lifeline when we couldn't go anywhere else. We had our own bands, and the Aristocrats lasted longer than anybody else, but Johnny Locklear had a band, and so did Gene Jones. Dentists, Dr. W.A. Fields, Dr. E.R. Dudley, H.T. Penn, Ellie Paxton, Theodore Banks, John Cundiff, Wendell Butler, Walter Clater, E.D. Downing, and G.P. Downing. They're all gone. And that's just a part of the group. Because now, attorneys, you don't have a single attorney in private practice. Jacob Reed, Wilmer Dillon, Reuben Lawson, George Lawrence, Oliver Arnold, David Whitlock, and Clarence Newsom. And David Whitlock and Clarence Newsom were younger lawyers. They were in college with me, but to think, we don't even have anybody from that era in business. Taxi companies, you didn't have to call Yellow Cab. You could call Hunt or BPW. Restaurants, Gill's on Norfolk Avenue, then Gill and Finney's on Henry Street, then Staples, then Dell's, then Chili Beans. And Chili Beans was good for the Addison students because they would assume certain responsibilities and just walk on over to Chili Beans for hot dogs. Tourist homes, Calvin's, Maud Reynolds, Pine Oak Inn. Recreation facilities, where your family Y is now, was Dreamland. And then on top of the hill opposite the school was Royal Garden. And that's where the pool was. Taylor's, Paige Crichton, Zach Taylor, Y. Hutsona, B. Barty, and Pendleton. Who can you get to make you a suit now? Contractors, James Williams, E.S. Brown, Grant Wilson. We even had a photo studio Mr. Herman Clark, right there at the end of Gainsborough on Gilman Avenue. Watch repairing. William Whittington. Who repairs your watches now? Music school, Troy P. Gorham. Shoe repair shops, Ernest Green, Mann's, Ragsdale, and Polk. And I forgot to put Dunnival there, because Dunnival's little repair shop was on Rutherford Avenue, and my mama would even let me walk up there to carry my shoes. Service stations, Clayton's, Ford's, Williamson, the YMCA and the YWCA, William A. Hunton and Phyllis Wheat. I haven't finished yet. I'm still going strong.
Please continue. This is so fascinating.
An entertainment promoter, Chris Morris and Arthur Rucker. Beauty supply, Norval Coles. You hear about Sally's now, but what about Norval Coles? Kaiser Music Shop. There were two theaters, the Virginia Theater and the Lincoln. Now these two are really interesting. Jerry the Popsicle Man and the Pie Man. I don't remember what his name was, but he would go with his little basket with pies, and that man could really make a pie, I'm here to tell you. First Baptist Church had a Sunday school orchestra. The two Charltons, Nina and Dorothy's daddy and his brother, Almon Crocker, and Mrs. Lucy Stratton directed there. Sunday school orchestra. There was a program on radio station WDBJ. It was called the Back Home Devotional Hour. And there were three ministers. Reverend A.L. James was from First Baptist Church. Reverend James R. Johnson was from Ebenezer AME Church. And then I don't remember the name of the Presbyterian minister, but they were on every Wednesday night. The two major employers in the city always had noonday religious services for their workers, Norfolk and Western and American Fiscos. You might have needed some money, but we didn't have paydays at that time. But J.L. Reed and H.E. Johnson had Magic City Building and Loan right there on Gilmer Avenue. Jones Candy Kitchen. Mr. Dan Jones could make the best peanut brittle you want to put in your mouth. And it was right there where Chili Beans took over that little spot. You had Prunty and Prunty Cleaners. I don't think we have any now. Funeral homes, C.C. Williams, W.F. Hughes, Citizens Undertaking Establishment, and Jordan's Furnished Funeral Home. Four. And now you barely have two. Herman Paxton Drum and Bugle Corps. You never heard of that one. Elnora Acres was the youth majorette, and Alphonza Edwards was the youth major. Then Mrs. Addie Lipscomb was the adult majorette, and Mr. Dan Jones was the adult major. And then we had parades in the black neighborhood for Elks and whatever, Moses, and but they always used Herman Paxton Drum and Bugle Corps. We had a laundry, and Christine Payne's mama was one of the co-owners. It was called Swan White Land Hand Laundry. Mrs. Annabelle Keelan and Mrs. Maude Davis. It was over on Park Street, just before you got to Loudoun. We had a beauty school. Mrs. Ann Roseman had the beauty school, and that was in Northeast, where Commonwealth and 4th Street sort of came together. And then, of course, you know we had beauticians. And that was just, these are just some of the things that I thought of that Roanoke has lost. Now, my, surely, there are more.
My. Wow. Do you remember any of the entertainment that came to the Dumas? Were you allowed to?
Oh, no. I couldn't go to anything like that. You didn't know my mama. No. I do remember going to the Roanoke Theater and having to go to the back and climb all those steps, but I could buy my ticket at the front.
Okay.
Well, that was as far as I got. The Lille home was down on Harrison Avenue. Has anyone told you about the Lille home? That was where the folks went to dance, and they had a good time. On Harrison Avenue, before you get to Gainsborough, do you remember where those houses were on the right-hand side going west?
Mm-hmm.
You do?
I sure do.
Well, that's where the Lille home was. I know you saw a vacant lot in between some of those. That's where the old Lille home was. And you better not go there, but you sure could kind of listen and see what was. And, oh, the African Americans had a real big social club called the Bings. They were only men. And you weren't anybody if you didn't get an invitation from the Bings. And sometimes their dances were right there at Lille home.
The Bings.
B-I-N-G-S.
Wow. This is really fascinating.
Oh.
Who were some of the strong community leaders? I know you said you were really proud of your father and
well, he wasn't the community leader.
Were the ministers the leaders at that time?
Yeah. I can think of one of our former pastors, Reverend P.S. Mosley.
Mm-hmm.
He was tall. He was just as straight as an arrow. He always had his big old cigar in his mouth. And he walked through Henry Street and Gainsborough. Our church was still on Gainsborough at the time. And he was friendly with those people. If they were in the beer garden, so what? He talked to them. And when it was time for him to go to conference, they were giving him their conference money. They didn't belong to our church. They knew, but they knew that he needed conference money. And they helped him. And he was a very gracious person. Reverend P.M. Caldwell, the people didn't know, in a sense, what church he belonged to, because anybody that needed his help, he was ready to help them. And when I talked with his daughter after they went to Virginia Beach, some people wanted to know if he were an employee of the hospital, because they always saw him in the hospital. But he said, if anybody needs my help, I'll go.
Wow.
Okay. I guess Lawyer Lawson was very active so far as the community was concerned. And
Dr. Claire,
I don't think they were as much in the community, the programs and concerns, but they were very concerned in the medical world, so I don't think they extended themselves that much. But now you see what Walter has done since he spread himself out beyond the field of dentistry.
How did the Gainsborough Branch Library play a part in the community? Mrs. Lee was librarian for a while there. Was she librarian when you were there?
Yeah, but there was another one before her.
Yes, it was.
Miss Preston. I don't remember what her first name was, because we didn't have any first name. We were just Miss Preston. And it was over in the basement, well, on the first floor, rather, building right on the corner of Patton and Gainsborough. Mm-hmm. There was just one big room, but it was a library. And Mrs. Elmont Crocker's sister, Ella Bowden, was library there.
So were you available or were you around when Mrs. Lee was there also?
Oh, yes. She even did a lot of speaking to the various churches and so forth, and she spoke it out. And that was one place I could go. I could go to the library.
And you still can't come to the library.
Yes, but the problem now is I'm not driving. But I was even a member of the Jesse Fawcett Reading Club when I first came back.
Very good. I remember reading about that.
You did? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was your life affected by segregation and the civil rights movement?
It was funny because white people entrusted their most precious possessions to black people, and that was their children. And to me, that was just pure funny because the people could have done anything to those children that they want, and yet the children realized those were their real mothers. I'm not going to say that all black people love them to the extent that they just love them, love them, love them, but they knew how to even punish them, and yet the parents wouldn't know. If you remove a child's shoes and beat the bottom of his feet and then put his socks and shoes back on, you have no whelps. You have nothing. American Visco's had a dormitory for women who came here to work in the plant. Yes, sir. It was on 9th Street, just above where the bridge is now. And there were black women who worked in the dormitory, housekeepers. And of course they had the cafeteria there too, because that was their home while they were working. But then if you hear some of them talk about what they did if the girls were not very kind to them. Suppose you are sick and I have to bring you your food. I could put something in it. And I have been told by some who actually worked there that they would spit in it. And it, so you really don't know, and I mean, to me, that was just pure funny that you entrust the most precious thing that you have to these people that you don't like. Of course, the water fountains in the stores, one said black and one said white, and of course, the blacks would spit in the white and keep going. You couldn't go to the counter and buy candy. If anybody else was there, you had to wait until everybody had been served, if there were white people there. And then you got your candy. You couldn't sit down and eat if you got it, you better get out of there with it if you want to eat it. While I was in Virginia Union, one of my very good friends and I decided to dress up one Saturday, and we went downtown, and we did our own little something. And she was studying Spanish, and I was studying French, and I didn't know what she was saying, and she didn't know what I was saying. And we went and stood by the water fountain, and we were just speaking in our foreign languages. And so finally one of the clerks came over, and of course we could not speak good English. So this says white, that says black. You turn the thing on the bottom, the water come up the same. What the difference? Her face turned as red as a beet. She couldn't answer us. What was the difference? There was no difference. It was just water. I had experiences, though, at Tri-C when I was sent to Mississippi to interview another person for a position at the college. Of course, she was black, and they wanted her, but they said they couldn't. She said she didn't have money to come for an interview, and they said they could not give her money because they hadn't given anybody else money to come for an interview. But they said, we can send you. And they did. And oh, of course, I knew I was looking good that morning. And I was going on. I had to change in Atlanta. And then when I got to Jackson, Mississippi, oh, I had my best voice. And I went over to the person who was selling tickets. And I told him, I'm representing Cuyahoga Community College, and I've come for an interview for a young person, and I'd like a conference room, please. And he said, well, we don't have any conference room. How long do you think you'll be? Probably an hour. So he said, well, the vice president isn't here right now, and they're going to have lunch. He gave the time. And so he said, I'll let you go in his office and have your interview as long as you be out within an hour. Oh, yes. He was sitting there laughing. Of course, I had questions to ask, and they had told me, if you think she will work well with the faculty and so forth in the English department, you give her the, they didn't call it contract, they called it. The word is on the tip of my tongue and it won't come out. So if you don't think so, don't give it to her, bring it back, proffer. I was very much pleased with the young lady. I gave her the proffer, she signed it. Now, $9,000 doesn't sound like much today, but to trust me to take a $9,000 proffer. So after we had finished, we really did do the interview first, but then when we were finished, she said, Kathy, let's walk all through and let them see us coming out. That's what we did. But I had a terrible experience going back to Cleveland. Hurricane Audrey was having her say. And when we got to Atlanta and got ready to board the plane, it was raining so hard. When we got there that morning, there was a man standing at the bottom of the steps. They didn't have covered walkways at that time. So he was standing at the bottom of the steps with umbrellas. But when I got ready to come back, the wind was so high, an umbrella would do you no good. So he would open the door and let, say, two or three people out. And by the time you got to the top of the steps, then he'd open the door and let somebody else out until all got on. And that was a bumpy ride. Mm-hmm. But that young lady stayed with the college until this past December when she retired. I went when she was 50. She gave herself a birthday party. She said, I'm not married. I don't see him. I'm going to have myself a party. So I went for her 50th birthday party. Then in 06, she got married, and I went for her wedding. And it was just marvelous to see how she had had two sabbaticals while she was there. She was working on her doctorate, but she said, I'm not going. But that's still extra information and so forth. And I don't know. I know she was an associate professor, and I don't know whether she made full professor or not. But one year I was supposed to teach Black literature. And unfortunately, that was the quarter that my hands got so I couldn't write on the board. So I had to take the quarter off. But some of the other people in the department had said, Johnny, do you think Kathy can teach Black literature? And she said, she just delighted in it. She said, Kathy has forgotten more Black literature than some of us know. But anyway, she taught Black literature some, and she taught the higher composition courses. And I mean, she is just an excellent teacher.
And where did she retire from?
She retired from Cuyahoga Community College. She'd been there 30. She came in 72.
Very interesting. Okay, now I'm going to go down to businesses and ask, do you remember when the silk mill closed?
Yes, very well. I can't tell you the year, but my daddy worked at American Viscose, and many of his cousins worked at American Viscose. And that was a very devastating situation because it was almost impossible for them to get jobs because most of the Black men, I don't know about the whites, but most of the Blacks were beyond 35, and the policy was not to hire anyone beyond 35. So some of them worked at Double Envelope, and some worked at the City Hall. Doing lawn care department, things of that sort. Now, you know what that was like, a real come down from what they had been getting. But that's the only kind of jobs that they could get.
At that time. Mrs. Pullins, I would like to thank you for this interview, and I would like to just say, to ask if there is anything else you would like to tell me. Anything that you can think of that we have not talked about that you would just like to say, Carla, I need to leave this information. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to say to us before we close this interview?
I think we have to, as Black people, look at what we have lost. So often we think we gained everything with integration. but I'm not so sure that we gained everything. I look at our students now, it bothers me. We don't have truant officers now, but Dr. Ellie Paxson's mother rode a motorcycle as a truant officer, and people were just as afraid of her as if they were, as if she were a real officer. You know, these kids fear nobody and nothing. But if my pack were after you, you try to kind of get out of her way. And I'm not so sure that teachers today, certainly not all of them, aren't enamored with the idea, go day, come day, God send payday. I had worked 25 years, and that was the last year that I worked in Roanoke. That was the first year that I'd made $10,000. But there was a love of teaching and a love of children, and you were so concerned about their hereafters. You might look at a child and you never thought that that child was beyond help. But I'm not so sure that that's the same attitude. And then the parents were backups. Look at your parent-teacher associations. They don't participate. Christine Payne's mama was a member of the Addison PTA, and she didn't have chick nor child there. But she was interested in the children. There were other people who were interested, and they still worked with PTA. Even though now they call it PSTA, but that still doesn't make anybody else work. I think I've said enough.
Well, I certainly do. Thank you. And once again, we will have this at the Roanoke Public Library, the Virginia Room, and also the Gainesboro Virginia Wiley section. So I do thank you for all your help and information, and I look forward to hearing this again. Thank you, Ms. Bullen.
Thank you, Carla.